And welcome to the audio choke here at MMATorch.com. Appreciate having you with us on this fine podcast. It's a mixed martial arts love letter from the 49th state. Just guess which one it is. All right, like every week.
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm...
Matt.
Collins. Gotcha. Okay, cool. And we begin with UFC 123. Let's talk about what's happening in 2 months. You know, it's going to...
I think we might be getting ahead of ourselves. Clearly, we should talk about Bellator and Strikeforce Challengers. I think those were the pretty big events from last week.
Never!
Did we miss anything?
I think we missed a lot of big stuff, actually.
You know,
UFC
I think there might have
been
something going on in, you know, the only fight organization that actually matters, and that's the UFC.
There's only one game in town, Tobin, don't you know? That's what Dana White tweets.
Yeah, there's the UFC, and then there's the minor leagues.
Am I the only one on this podcast not getting Zuffa checks?
Wait, you're not getting any?
Or checks. We're getting all the Zuffa chicks we can handle. They are big and burly.
I said checks.
Okay.
You guys are on the take, is what I was implying. Hey, Seth, so Viking loses. So is this
Viking
it?
Versus Inquisitor. Conquistador.
Yeah, that is actually not I only have a history minor, but I'm pretty sure Mexicans were not, in fact, big fans of people coming to conquer their people and kill them.
Well, then revenge has been taken.
And Vikings didn't invade Mexico.
All right, well, you know what, let's just get
down
to the facts.
Two big men fought, and one of them won.
Yes.
Let's not make it racial, Matt.
The smaller man won.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, pretty cool. People like that.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, so Brock Lesnar, Cain Velasquez, billed as the biggest heavyweight fight, which, you know, I don't necessarily take issue with that. The kind of nice thing about the UFC's heavyweight division now is you could kind of say that for most of their fights. Like, each fight could be arguably, like, the biggest MMA or, like, biggest UFC heavyweight fight title fight in history.
Certainly didn't play out evenly, like, a, you know, true
yeah,
battle fashion.
It was not a war.
Yeah, if only their fights were scripted, it would be really great.
Not complaining, I'm just saying.
Right.
It didn't wind up being the greatest heavyweight fight of all time.
Oh, I said
yeah.
Biggest.
I would certainly say that in terms of fan excitement,
yeah, build
the
up.
Previous heavyweight title fight was certainly more exciting because there was the come from behind.
Yeah.
Granted, this one was fun because it had the changing of the guard. You know, Brock Lesnar goes down, Cain Velasquez at this point looks unstoppable. So there was that kind of excitement. But in terms of the match itself, not just the meaning of the match, but the actual match, this one was just a really one-sided ass-kicking.
Indeed it was. Yeah, I guess when I was saying biggest title fight, I was referring more to like the build-up and coverage. Like, it got a lot of ESPN coverage, and we talked briefly last week about the build-up with them touting Cain Velasquez as potentially, at that point, the first Mexican UFC heavyweight title holder. And so I think that got a lot of play in the media as well. But yeah, certainly the quality of the fight itself, it wasn't like the best heavyweight fight.
It was shocking, nonetheless. Yeah. It was a big deal. Wound up being a big deal.
Yeah.
It hit home to a lot of people, fight fans or just casual fans of the sport, or, you know, just people that know Brock Lesnar from professional wrestling. You know, yeah, there was a lot of people that this match touched emotionally. Yeah.
Well, it touched Brock Lesnar also, but mostly in the face.
In the fight!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially in a few key areas where he was bleeding profusely.
So what the heck happened there? What happened to Brock Lesnar? Shouldn't he have just come in there, bear-hugged somebody, and then rode a horse out?
He tried.
Yeah, I mean, he got the takedown, but Velasquez just popped right back up.
Yeah.
One thing that I mentioned, and granted, I was a bit inebriated when I watched it, but something that I was reading about the fight is that I don't even remember if it was Brock himself talking about it or someone else, but Brock, you know, he got the takedown, and then he immediately went to pass guard instead of being, you know, more strategic about things. And as soon as he went to be aggressive, Velasquez reversed him and got right back up. And, I mean, I've only seen the fight once, so I can't recall if that was exactly the way it went down or not. But, yeah, Brock Lesnar got the takedown. Velasquez got back up, and then it went downhill for Brock after that.
Yeah, it was kind of, I think the speed at which Brock Lesnar came out, I mean, he kind of did the bull rush thing at the beginning. And yeah, like when he got him down, when he got Velasquez down, I was talking to my roommate who was watching with me. I'm like, okay, see, this is where I think Cain Velasquez could get in trouble. And then he got up, and I was like, oh, that was unexpected. Because I think, you know, I think a lot of people were expecting once Brock Lesnar got Velasquez down, he'd be more methodical, or kind of like what we saw in the Frank Mir fight, the second one, where he's, you know, held him down and worked kind of ground and pound. And yeah, he just went right for the pass. There wasn't any waiting around, it didn't seem, once he got him down. You know, he wasn't, you know, I guess you could say he wasn't being careful in his maneuvering once he got down. He wasn't making sure he had the position secured.
And that's the same thing that cost him his first fight in the UFC against Frank Mir, was that he was just being balls out aggressive. And, he overcame that pretty quickly. He didn't really show much aggression at all on the ground in his next fight against Heath Herring, and he kind of worked his way up. So this might kind of be a learning curve for Brock Lesnar. You know, get the guy down, don't go for an immediate finish, you know, like work him over a bit kind of deal, as opposed to, just get him down and go crazy, but you also don't want to just get him down and lay on him either. You got to find the threshold where you can do damage but not leave yourself open to getting reversed or, just getting the stand-up.
Right. And, I mean, I definitely understand Lesnar's strategy. I don't know if it was the best one, but, I mean, certainly because I think a lot of people who picked Cain Velasquez to win figured it would come later, like I did. I figured it would be after a couple rounds and maybe after Lesnar had gotten tired out that we'd see Velasquez be able to get the finish. So I just wasn't expecting it, again, like not to play out that way. But I could certainly see from Lesnar's standpoint where he's like, okay, I don't want to go into the deep waters with this guy. Maybe I can rush him early on. But it didn't really pan out for him.
Yeah, it didn't play out for him. And Velasquez got back up and landed a few punches, and Brock Lesnar lost his balance. He wasn't hurt at that point, but he did the somersault cartwheel deal across the cage.
Breakdancing, yes.
Yeah. And, they fought a little more, and he was down, taking some punches. The ref told him he has to do something, and he did something, but he wasn't able to get up and just kept taking punishment until the fight was stopped.
Yeah, a huge moment for Cain Velasquez, and, again, I kind of joked about it last week, and you're like, yeah, Cain Velasquez could be the first Mexican heavyweight champion, except for he was born in America, but, I guess some people online actually are, like, concerned or, like, think that's a serious issue with the way the UFC promoted that, and I just thought it was kind of funny. Like, I it doesn't really matter to me, but it's a perfectly valid point because he does have that Mexican connection. His parents from Mexico.
It's a huge untapped market for
right,
a
exactly.
Heavyweight. Yeah, I mean,
and so it'd be foolish for the UFC to not go for that to play up his heritage, because he does have that heritage. It's just if you get down to like the very very narrow definition of a Mexican, he's American because he was born here. But yeah, that's the Mexican market is something, or the Latino market in general, I guess, is something the UFC has been trying to get into because, you know, look at boxing. The Latino market is basically holding boxing up, keeping it, you know, from going under. And the UFC hasn't had that. Like, they tried it a little bit with Tito Ortiz, but he's much...
Not quite there.
He's much less Hispanic than
Cain Velasquez.
Cain Velasquez. And, you know, they had Roger Huerta for a while. But, yeah, I think Cain Velasquez, you know, provided he can hold on to the belt for a bit, you know, we might end up seeing that UFC card in Mexico City or something like that.
Yeah, that's something that they've been wanting to do. They've been kind of waiting for the right opportunity, and they've kind of had the same thing I've heard with the Philippines. I'm not too into Philippine geography, so I don't know where, like, you know, a major city was, but they kind of had that hope for Brandon Vera, I guess.
Right.
Because he's got some Filipino heritage going on up in there. But, yeah, they got a similar thing for Cain Velasquez, and he's earned it. I mean, the heavyweight champ, it can't get any better than that.
Exactly, and I mean, clearly the UFC's marketing of them really seemed to work. I mean, you know, that the Anaheim Center, it used to be the Duck Pond or whatever. I don't know what it's called now. But, I mean, you look at that, and I mean, yeah, there's a lot of Hispanic fans, a lot of the Mexican flags and all of that. So, I mean, I think their marketing, you know, was really, it worked really well. It was a good marketing plan.
It was spot on. Yeah,
yeah, and again, just going back to the fight itself, I mean, what a...
It was a good fight.
Right, I mean, this was really... I don't know how many doubters Cain Velasquez had because, you know, a lot of people were talking about, like, oh, yeah, this guy's... He's going to be the next big one, but, you know, there's Brock Lesnar, and some people are still like, oh, yeah, he has that knockout over Nogueira, but Nogueira was sick or whatever. I think this was really the fight where people who were doubted... Velasquez's legitimacy, hopefully a lot of that can be put to rest now. I mean, certainly he's not going to be unbeatable. Everyone loses, but you know he definitely earned his spot and earned the title for sure.
And that's just the way of the sport. Like, yeah. Dominance is not a part of mixed martial arts. There's a few guys that have it, but then, you know,
everyone loses eventually.
Everyone loses, and there's always a surprise. Like a huge underdog will just, you know, come from somewhere, you know.
Well, you can go ahead and put me in that list of doubters that you mentioned, Tobin.
Yeah.
I was very critical of Kane. I mean, just a year ago, I was laughing at Kane for, you know, not being able to put away Jet Congo after completely dominating him. And, I mean, having what was, in my eyes, kind of a bogus stoppage over Ben Rothwell, even after completely dominating him, just because he was doing absolutely no damage in my eyes. And then he stopped Nogueira, but, you know, like, Nogueira now as opposed to Nogueira in 2003, it's hard to tell,
right?
You know, like, what that really meant.
Right, so we didn't have that definitive moment of, like, okay, Cain Velasquez is for sure for real. Because, yeah, like, you mentioned the Congo fight, and, like, I agree with you, like, I think Velasquez is obviously very good, but like you watch that Congo fight, like okay, he nearly got dropped at the beginning of every round, and then wasn't able to finish, even though he was clearly dominating on the ground game after that.
Yeah, well, so, to me, it wasn't even the fact that he got dropped every round, because you know Congo is a hard hitter. I would think that most people who got hit with those shots would be hurt, but to me, it was the amount of damage or the amount of shots that he hit Congo with. And not really damaging him is what really, like, I kind of assumed that Cain Velasquez was going to have a stigma over his career of being that heavyweight that couldn't knock people out. Because at heavyweight, you know, everyone can knock people out.
Right.
But Cain Velasquez just kind of had this thing going on where he was just beating the crap out of somebody and he was just taking it. But he's worked on his power a lot since then. He's worked on his striking, and clearly that is not the case anymore.
Right.
Whether or not he can take the shots, that remains to be seen, because he hasn't really been taking a whole lot of shots lately.
Right. I think we're going to find out in his title defense, though.
Yeah, well, that's going to be a big deal, because his next guy he's fighting against has got some pretty good stand-up.
Yeah, I think most people, most of the MMA, the insiders, the pro journalists. I mean, Junior Dos Santos is kind of regarded as, at least in the heavyweight division, having some of the best boxing around. So I think we're gonna get to see a lot more of the, maybe not a lot more, but at least more of that striker versus grappler dynamic. Because if there's any questions about Dos Santos still, it is his. How good he is once he gets to the ground. I mean, he's been able to... We've seen he has very good takedown defense. But, you know, it's still, you know, can he get up off of his back? That sort of thing. I think Velasquez can be the guy to put him on his back.
Well, yeah, I think that's going to be the story of that upcoming fight is not can Velasquez beat Dos Santos standing up, but it's going to be more of the question marks over Dos Santos's head. How good is his takedown defense, really? How good is he once he gets taken down to the ground? He's a Nogueira trained guy, so you would think he's got a good ground game, but we haven't seen it at all, so we have no idea.
Right. Matt, you I understand you made some money off of this fight.
Two whole dollars, my man. I even got a double or nothing or whatever.
So you had some people who were well on board with Lesnar and were able to take advantage of them monetarily.
Yes, haha.
So, congratulations.
Well, thanks, man. You know, anything I can do to, rube somebody, you know, pull a fast one.
Well, I was just kind of curious. Like, I just watched a fight with my roommate, and he watches a bit of MMA, but
it
not,
was against
not,
someone that right. was that my boss,
okay.
my boss Brad, and he knows mixed martial arts.
Yeah,
now,
he's a fan.
He tends to fall into into the goose step of you know, Dana White.
Yeah.
You know, and he just, his word is bond, and, you know, right. That's all well and good, and he has his own brain, and he can make his own decisions. And obviously, after that Carwin fight, like, Brock Lesnar is awesome. He still is, you know, even after a great fight, an amazing one after Carwin.
Yeah.
So I just felt that that Velasquez would have the quicker hands and just win. So
yeah.
I was correct.
Yes. And you know, I'd like to pat myself on the back with the Velasquez prediction, but as mentioned before the show started, I was having cold feet right up until the fight started.
Isn't that size difference amazing?
Yeah, and it's like such like, and not to say we give like tons and tons of like well reasoned, intelligent like analysis on the show, but I think we're pretty smart when it comes to laying out fights. But like all the talking points I had with predicting how Velasquez could win, like as soon as Lesnar entered the ring, I was like, oh, he's so much bigger than Velasquez. And then, like, the first time they clinched, I'm like, look, they don't even look like they're in the same weight class. What's happening? And then after that, I was like, okay, no. Velasquez is quicker. He might not hit as hard, but he's got better stand-up. He's more technical. You know, I had to take a minute. But I was just curious, did you guys watch with a bunch of people? Because, again, like, I just watched with one other person. I was wondering what the thoughts of the more mainstream fans.
Emotions weren't as high for that one as it was with the Tito Ortiz fight.
Really?
You know? Tito is, well, we'll get to that in a little bit. But I think that for a fight like that, like, after watching that fight, there's no way you can make a fuss about it,
you
just kind of have to accept what happened. And
well, I think Tobin's talking about going into the fight.
Right, because I know Brock Lesnar's like, we talked about the build-up, and he's such a polarizing figure for a lot of people. I just didn't know if there was a lot of hype with the people you were watching.
Just, he's a big dude.
Big dude, okay, very cool.
Yeah,
very cool.
Big dude.
Oh, go ahead, Greg.
I'm just saying, he's a big, strong dude. One thing I just thought I'd mention, I saw this on Twitter and thought it was pretty amusing. A little bit of history on Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar has now lost the UFC championship to Cain Velasquez, and he lost the last WWE championship he had to Eddie Guerrero. Interesting correlation between the two. He seems to have issues with Mexican-American opponents.
Mm. Yeah, viva la raza, man.
What does that mean?
I think it means long live the race, which actually is very inappropriate for a white person to say. But and God bless you, Eddie Guerrero, wherever you are.
Yes.
Very sad. But yeah, no, that's actually kind of interesting. Nice factoid, Greg.
Thanks.
I was gonna add a question for you guys just about that fight, because we mentioned in his previous fight with Carwin, Lesnar took a lot of punishment in that first round. Do you think he was taking more damage in this fight, or do you think the ref was just more? And I'm not implying at all that it was a bad stoppage, but just like kind of curious. I mean, because I think everyone would kind of say Shane Carwin might hit harder than Cain Velasquez, but maybe he's not as technical and clearly not as crisp with his striking.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think Velasquez was going to stop.
Yeah.
Like, there was nowhere to go.
The difference here is Carwin may have landed some bigger, more powerful shots, but with Velasquez, you don't get a feeling that this is going to be one bad round, and let's see what happens next round. I mean, Velasquez didn't throw as many punches as Carwin did.
Yeah, he was picking his shots. He seemed a lot more precise.
And as far as I can tell, he connected with just about every one of them when Brock Lesnar was on his back. He didn't hit Brock Lesnar's arms a whole lot. I mean, he was waiting to see Lesnar's face and then hit it.
Yeah.
And he probably could have done that for 25 minutes. If it had gone another minute and, you know, finished out the round, it's possible Brock Lesnar would have busted something out the second round, but there's no real justification to say why Brock Lesnar should have, you know, not had that fight stop when it was stopped, because it was clearly a legit stop.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you know, you look at the Brock Lesnar Shane Carwin fight, in hindsight, it was great that they didn't stop it, but at the time, I really couldn't have complained if they did.
Right.
Because Brock Lesnar took some serious damage. And that's why refereeing is such a hard job. I give a lot of respect to the referees, even when they blow stuff, because, you know, you're always wrong, basically, unless you pull off a one-in-a-million call, like, you know, the Brock Lesnar-Shane Carwin fight, or, you know, a few other ones. Frank Mir against Tim Sylvia comes to mind when Frank Mir broke Tim Sylvia's arm and nobody saw it but the ref.
Right.
But, I mean, it's either, like, you call it too early and it's like, oh, you know, he could have taken two more punches. Or you call it too late and it's like, why did he have to, you know, deal with all that punishment? He was clearly not going to come back.
Right.
So I really see no real room for bitching in either of these two fights.
Yeah, I'm kind of on board with you on that.
Oh, absolutely. No, I thought the refereeing in this fight was really good. There was one moment where I thought it was going to stop and kept it going.
Yeah.
And then by the time it was done, it was over.
Yeah, well, in this fight, as with also the last fight, one thing that I really liked in both of them is that the ref told Brock to do something. And Brock did something both times. That said, what Brock did in the Carwin fight was better. He was more effective than what he did in the Velasquez fight. But, I mean, Herb Dean told Brock to do something the other day. And Brock did something, but he was still taking punishment. And that, I think, was the big difference.
Yeah.
Is that when Rosenthal, I think it was, told Brock to do something against Carwin, Brock got into a situation where he wasn't taking the punishment he was before Rosenthal talked to him.
Yeah.
And Herb Dean told Brock to do something, and Brock did something. He didn't just lay there, but he was still just getting his face pounded.
Yeah. So we talked about what's next for Cain Velasquez, obviously the matchup with Junior Dos Santos, which I think should be very, very fun for fight fans. But what's next for Brock Lesnar besides WrestleMania with The Undertaker?
Yeah.
I mean, who do we see him fighting next? I mean, I know there's a lot of the heavyweight opponents are kind of tied up in matchups already, but I mean, who would you guys like to see him fight?
I'd like to see him fight Gilbert Ivel.
that'd be an appropriate rematch, or not rematch, a rebound fight.
Shane Carwin,
in that it
again?
Would be really easy for Brock Lesnar,
yeah.
I would think.
Well, Shane Carwin is set to fight Roy Nelson right now.
Right.
Which, you know, I think is a great fight for the two of them, but I also think either of them would be a fun fight for Brock, so like Brock's kind of the odd man out in terms of the top five, because there was five guys we were looking at not too long ago that could potentially be the champion at any time.
Yeah.
Brock Lesnar, Cain Velasquez, Junior Dos Santos, Roy Nelson, and Shane Carwin. And four of them are set to fight each other now. So Brock Lesnar is the odd man out. There's the possibility of the Brock Lesnar-Frank Mir trilogy, which would be interesting from the trilogy point of view, but Mir hasn't really been too impressive as of late. You know, he got beaten by Shane Carwin, and then his fight against Krokop, he won, but come on.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, I mean, as far as what's available, yeah, I mean, I think we might see that the trilogy fight with Frank Mir, but, you know, even with the holes in Lesnar's game still that we saw, and, you know, he's still, for a fighter, you know, very, you know, only been doing it for a couple years, and, you know, what, had like eight fights total, I mean.
Sure, but how long does he really have in the sport?
Right. Right, well, that's what I'm saying is, like, even with those holes in his game and, like, he's still learning, I'd still favor him pretty heavily over Frank Mir. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, even that Frank Mir, you know, won that first fight, but he was kind of taking a beating up until he won, so.
And even then, that was Lesnar's second fight.
Yeah.
You know, like, now, Lesnar is still not a super experienced guy, but that was his second fight, and now he's had seven fights.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, you gotta, like, consider his experience level to be basically four times as much, while Mir's experience level has not increased that much proportionally.
Yeah.
I would be really surprised if Frank Mir were to win the trilogy. Other things that pop up, I mean, there's other guys out there. Brendan Schaub just got a good win, but I wouldn't want to ruin a prospect like that as to just getting him handled by Lesnar, which is kind of what I would expect to happen.
Right.
But, you know, there's always Gonzaga, who you can beat his ass, and, you know, that basically puts you in line for a title.
What about Krokop? I'm sure everyone would like to see their favorite pride hero of yesteryear just get demolished again, you know.
That would be worth seeing, I think. And even, you know, the Nogueira fight, which I wouldn't particularly want to see, but I think that would be stylistically an interesting match.
Right. Yeah, and yeah, I mean, what's the big takeaway for Brock Lesnar in this fight? I mean, like, the thing that stood out to me is, like, his stand-up really has to improve. Not even necessarily his own striking, but just his defense or the way he responds to strikes, because he just doesn't seem to handle it well. I mean, like, and no one, that's an that's not a terrible thing. I mean, no one should respond well to getting punched hard in the face, but, like, you know, just like his, I guess the way he handled himself just seemed a little off. Like, even his stance in the stand-up, it just, he looked uncomfortable standing up at all.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if he's a bit gun-shy after the Carwin fight.
Right.
Because I don't think Velasquez hits as hard as Carwin. The volume deal, you know, like the quantity over the quality of punches might have something to do with it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, Lesnar looked like he didn't want to be standing from the get-go.
Yeah.
And he didn't look like that in some of his previous fights. I mean, he holds a standing knockout on his record.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's not, or he wasn't, I should say, afraid to stand up completely. But now he seems to be. Granted, Cain Velasquez looked outstanding standing up in his previous fight against Nogueira. So, I mean, he could have just been watching his tapes and be like, I need to get this guy down now.
Right.
But, I mean, I think a lot of that could come from experience to, you know, being hit by probably the hardest puncher in the sport.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's interesting to see how he'll come back from this. I mean, I think he's still obviously very marketable, that sort of thing. And we'll see how much, I guess, of the Brock Lesnar bump Cain Velasquez gets off of this. I mean, I think he'll probably be pretty marketable, but, I mean, I doubt his next fight's going to do nearly well, attention-wise, as this fight, because, you know, Brock Lesnar has been the UFC's go-to pay-per-view draw.
Unless they're able to hook in that Hispanic community.
Right, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the ramifications of that are, if we'll see an uptick in
T-shirts, water bottles, hats, boots, you know.
One thing that I thought was interesting, I read a quote from one of Velasquez's trainers. I don't remember who it was, but he said that even going into this fight, they felt that the upcoming, and when I say upcoming, I mean like eventually, but the eventual rematch between Velasquez and Brock Lesnar was going to be a tougher fight than the fight they had on Saturday.
Hmm.
They assume that there's eventually going to be a rematch, whether it's, you know, 3 months from now or 2 years from now, but they kind of felt that maybe, I don't know if it was the element of surprise or if it was that Brock Lesnar's still on the learning curve, but they felt that this fight was going to be easier than when they feel that they are eventually going to have to fight Brock Lesnar again.
Yeah, and I think as long as, you know, of course the internet, you know, already speculated like, oh, how does Brock Lesnar respond to failure? Is he going to fight anymore? And like, yeah, I think Brock Lesnar is probably going to stick around MMA for a bit. And you
well,
know,
I'm pretty sure he responded to failure once already.
Yeah. And he punched it repeatedly in the face. But yeah, no, like I imagine if he sticks around the UFC for a while, I'm pretty sure, you know, we'll probably see him fight for the title again. I think those type of comments come from people like oh, you know, he couldn't cut it with the WWE because of, you know, he didn't want to do a job to the Undertaker. More on that later. You know, and you know, the Minnesota Vikings tryouts, he washed out of that. So, yeah.
He's not going anywhere. I mean, he went through that huge injury, and he was the champion, and, you know, he'll deal with it.
Yeah.
He seemed to, you know, take a loss with some good class and everything.
Yeah, and
I definitely liked his attitude regarding the loss, by the way.
Yeah, that stood out to a lot of people, I think. I heard several comments about that. Go ahead. Sorry to cut you off there, Greg.
Oh,
I think
no,
you're
that was really
else.
All I
yeah.
had to say about it.
Yeah, and one of the big takeaway points one of the things I want to, you know, hone in on here is, despite his loss, and all the people who lose with magnificent beards, don't think it's your beard's fault that you lost your fight. Please keep fighting with a beard, because it's like there's not enough facial hair in MMA, and I think Brock Lesnar has a rare class when it comes to beard quality.
Yeah, I saw a tweet from Ariel Helwani, one of the finest journalists, if not the finest journalist in mixed martial arts, saying, I hope Brock Lesnar never shaves again.
Exactly.
And, you know, I agree with that sentiment 100%. Brock Lesnar with a full, like, good beard looks like that Viking warrior to me. And without it, he just looks like some guy in the army or something.
Yeah, yeah, it's a good look for him. I like it. I hope that I hope it sticks around. And yeah, you know, other fighters who can do it, you know, let's make it happen.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying that somebody needs to necessarily grow a beard if it's not them, but it's Brock.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Brock. I mean, he's got it.
I'm just saying, GSP, let's do it, GSP, get a beard.
Yeah. French beard?
French Canadian. Yeah, I don't know. So there were other fights on this card. We should probably talk about those and then
were
talk.
There?
Yeah.
I don't see a whole lot of finishes. I kind of fell asleep for most of the card.
Really? Because I actually, like, despite the fact there was a lot of decisions, I thought it was, like, top to bottom a pretty solid card. Again, like, even though there wasn't a lot of finishes, but...
I just joked. There was some entertaining stuff. There were some of them that I thought were a little bit boring, but some of them were quite entertaining.
Yeah. I guess let's just run down from the top down. We had the, obviously, the main event, but the co-main event, Jake Shields, Martin Kampman, a split decision for Jake Shields. This was his big debut. He cut back down to welterweight after fighting for, I think, over a year at middleweight. And clearly the cut was not kind to him, but he toughed it out.
He had at least two fights at middleweight. I think his third fight ago was catchweight against Robbie Lawler, although I'm not 100% sure on that. But I know he fought at least Mayhem Miller and Dan Henderson at middleweight.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is his first fight down. Now, how did you score the fight, Tobin? Because there's been a lot of debate about this fight and the scoring.
Yeah, and this is one of those fights where, like, when it ends, I'm like, this is why I would hate to be an MMA judge. Because, like, everyone knows how to judge when a judge gets the wrong call. But, like, seriously, like, you look at that fight and you're like, I would hate to score that because... you talk about stuff like, oh, well, Martin Kampman did more damage. You know, Jake, he cut Jake Shields up. He landed more substantial striking, but Jake Shields controlled a majority of the fight with the ground game. Really at the end of that fight, I was like, I think Jake Shields won that, but it was really close. I could see Kampman maybe getting it. And, like, that, I know that's, like, a really wishy-washy answer, but, like, I did not think there was a clear definitive. I mean, it could have been a, like, it would have been crazy, but I mean, that could have been a draw because, like, no one clearly won that fight,
yeah.
You know, in my eyes. But again, like, I think I understand the Jake Shields decision. I think that is legit because, again, like, the grappling dominance, even though he was clearly gassed and was, you know, got beat, you know, the second round, I think, was when Kampman landed the couple of those big strikes.
Yeah, that was round two.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, very close and certainly, better than expected, I think, for Martin Kampman.
Agreed.
Yeah, I guess it was kind of surprising he didn't do more striking later on in the fight.
Yeah,
but,
especially in the third round.
Yeah, but, like, when the fight went down early in the first fight, or in the first round, I was like, oh, Martin Kampman's in trouble. And then, like, you know, Jake Shields got to mount pretty fast, and I was like, oh, wow. And then Martin Kampman eventually got out for it, and again, it was like, the same reaction I had when kind of like Cain Velasquez got out from underneath Brock Lesnar. I was like, oh, wow, I did not expect that would happen if it got to that position. I think Martin Kampman, at least judging from the crowd reaction, Martin Kampman comes away from this fight better than Jake Shields did because, you know, a split decision that the crowd doesn't agree with, always going to kind of make the winner look bad. But, probably not the debut anyone was hoping for Jake Shields, but, I think he earned the win.
Yeah, see, now, I judged the fight in my drunken stupor at 29-28 for Shields.
Yeah.
That was what seemed reasonable to me. I thought he clearly won the first two rounds. He didn't score a whole lot of damage, but, I mean, when you spend 90% of the fight on top, you don't need to score a whole lot of damage to secure rounds.
Right.
As far as the third round, I felt that Kampman controlled most of it. Shields controlled, I think, the last 2 minutes of it, but I wouldn't say he controlled enough of it to seal the fight.
Yeah.
Or seal the round, I should say. And this is coming from a guy who wanted Kampman to win. Like, I was cheering for Kampman. I was mad that Kampman wasn't trying to knock Shields out in the third round.
Right. Well, it was really clear Shields was gassed at that point.
Yeah. It seemed to me like it would be an easy knockout for a guy like Kampman, or at least, you know, stun him and then, you know, maybe try to finish him on the ground. But I've seen on the internet all kinds of swings. So far as, you know, I've seen a few people on the forums say that it should have been a 30-27 in Kampman's favor.
They are incorrect.
Yeah, and I see no justification for that one. But, I mean, there's people who think he should have certainly at least won 29-28.
Mm-hmm.
I can see the argument for Shields winning 30-27 more than I can see the Kampman 29-28 one.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, even while I don't feel that Shields should have stolen the third round, I can see, well, you know, he you didn't get the body triangle, and you know, he did do this and this and this, but certainly a lot of talk in this one about you know, who should have won the fight.
Right. So let's talk about what happens after this fight for Shields, because before it was kind of like, I was going to say implied, but it was basically flat out said, if Shields wins this fight, he'll get a title shot for the winner of George St. Pierre and Josh Koscheck. But much as the UFC and other fight promoters as well will do, if it's a less than stellar victory, and they might dial back on that promise. So do we still think Jake Shields is going to get a title shot, or does he have to go through the wet blanket John Fitch first?
I think he's going to have to do something to earn it. I don't know if it's going to be Fitch.
Yeah.
But I mean, the UFC gave the same treatment to Fitch recently, where, you know, I mean, his fight against Alves recently was billed as a number one contender fight.
Yeah.
And he won it boring, you know, which is kind of his MO. But, I mean, I don't know why that's such a surprise. But he won it in a less than exciting fashion. And Dana White kind of was like, let's see what else we got as far as number one contender fights.
Right.
Jake Shields kind of did the same thing. And he actually probably did worse. At least John Fitch was convincing in his win.
Yeah, it was a dominant grind out victory for Fitch. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Fitch wasn't exciting, but he convincingly defeated Thiago Alves.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, there's nobody on the internet saying that Alves won that fight.
Yeah.
But there are people who are saying Kampman won. That said, Jake Shields did nothing to me to show that he would have any chance at George St. Pierre. So I would say that he should have a fight. One of the things that I've seen on the internet is Jake Shields against Carlos Condit,
mm-hmm.
Which would also be a rematch, apparently. Should be interesting. But also, you know, maybe he wants to go up to middleweight.
Yeah.
He's been fighting there for at least like a year, like we've been talking about. And I think stylistically, he poses a big threat to a lot of the top guys at middleweight. Probably more of a threat than he does at the top guys at welterweight. Because welterweight has always been kind of a grappler's division, while middleweight has always kind of had a lot more knockout artists. And I could see a lot of the top guys at welterweight, John Fitch, George St. Pierre, Josh Koscheck, even Thiago Alves, kind of out-wrestling a guy like Jake Shields. While, you know, you get the Michael Bispings and the Chris Liebens and maybe even the Anderson Silvas, and Jake Shields could grind out decisions against these guys.
Right, yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I guess we'll see in the coming months because, you know, the way I was kind of looking at him, like, I think, you know, based on his resume, Jake Shields deserves a title shot at welterweight. But clearly after this fight, he's not really... You know, I'd much rather take another fight, if for no other reason than to get used to that weight. Because if he comes into shape for a title shot as he came in for this fight, that'd be bad news. And I think it would be unfair to everyone involved in that fight because it wouldn't be the best Jake Shields.
Yeah, well, I mean, if he came into a fight with George St. Pierre the way he came into a fight against Martin Kampman, the best he could hope for. The best he could hope for is win two rounds and then gas out and lose three rounds.
Right.
And that's the best that he could hope for. And he probably wouldn't even win those first two rounds.
Yeah. So, going to be a weird couple weeks while we wait to see what the decision is there. Because, I mean, and Joe Rogan had mentioned it on the broadcast, you know, when Jake Shields beefed up to 185, it wasn't that he just, like, ate a bunch of hamburgers and, you know, it wasn't that he actually put on muscle for that switch. It wasn't that he stopped cutting weight and, you know, just let himself go. He actually made an effort to put on, you know, muscle mass,
which is
kind of harder to cut.
And that's what George St. Pierre has been, you know, doing for his eventual move to 185, which he talks about, but has yet to make any actual plans.
Yeah. So, you mentioned, you know, if Jake Shields does have another fight at welterweight, you know, I'd like to see... Yeah, I think the Carlos Condit fight could be fun. But again, that might be an issue where the UFC doesn't want to lose a potential, you know, a potential contender down the line. Because I think Carlos Condit, you know, they could probably put those guys on different paths, and then you have two title contenders down the line as opposed to eliminating one. But yeah, I mean, it would definitely be an intriguing fight because I think Carlos Condit's come away since then. I don't know, transition into our next fight, but what about maybe Diego Sanchez, Jake Shields?
Well, that would be interesting, but it sounds to me like Diego is maybe talking about dropping back down to lightweight.
Yeah, make up your mind, Diego Sanchez. I mean, he looked really good the Saturday night.
He looked really good against Paulo Thiago, but I'll tell you what, he looked like ass against John Hathaway.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's just like he had a bad night for that fight or whatever, a bad camp, but yeah, I mean, at this point it's hard to say which Diego Sanchez is going to show up. You know, hopefully he's on the right track again, and it was interesting watching that fight. As soon as the second round ended, I was like, this is going to be fight of the night. Because, you know, Thiago, I think Thiago cleared, well, at least in my eyes, Thiago won that first round. But then after that, it was all Diego Sanchez.
Yeah, well, Diego, he took what Paulo had, and then he gave it back to him. Mm-hmm. And I think he over-hearted Paulo, you could say. I mean,
yeah.
He wanted it more, is what you can take away from that win. He earned it, like he said. You know, he's like, that's my new motto, just earn it. And I really think that he did. Because, I mean, Paulo, that first round, Paulo won, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And, you know, Diego was down, and he came back stronger than he was in the first round. And then what did Paulo do when it was tied up? He spent the whole third round on his back.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, that just shows the type of fighter that Diego is, or at least was last night, because he hasn't always been that way in some of his losses. So I think this may kind of show something about Diego's character. I mean, he almost kind of has the Vitor Belfort syndrome going on, where it's like, which Vitor is going to show up? Is it going to be the one that throws 1,000 punches in 5 seconds, or is it going to be the one that lays on his back and lets you beat him up?
Right.
And Diego might kind of have that thing going on. Although, you know, it's hard to say from his last fight against John Hathaway. It was his first fight coming back up, and he got embarrassed by BJ Penn. So, I mean, that could have had a lot to do with it. And then even given the BJ Penn fight, he took a big shot in round one that almost put him away. And sometimes that can affect you for the whole fight.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's probably a better fighter than the BJ Penn fight showed. Because, man, he got his ass kicked in that BJ Penn fight. And, I mean, most people were expecting BJ to win that fight, but nobody was expecting him to, like, outstrike him 150-8 or whatever that was.
Yeah, it was pretty ridiculous. But, yeah, I mean, I think people were kind of questioning how that affected Diego Sanchez mentally. So, yeah, we'll see how it plays out. But, I mean, I think, you know, whichever weight class he feels he wants to fight at is fine. I think he can be competitive at both.
Yeah,
so we'll see.
It sounds like he's back with Greg Jackson, though.
Right, yeah. I mean, he was working the corner and gave him the motivational speech and all that good stuff.
So, I mean, that's pretty interesting. And that's one thing that Joe Rogan felt the need to note is that when Diego left Jackson and moved to whoever he was with in San Diego, his jiu-jitsu got better, but his overall MMA game may have dropped as a result.
Huh.
Perhaps he was being, you know, a better submission guy, but less as a well-rounded competitor. Although I don't really feel that he's gotten a whole lot of submission wins since then, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But it's good to see him with Greg Jackson, because if nothing else, Greg Jackson gets wins out of people. I've been pretty critical about him and his excitement factor, but, I mean, he gets wins.
Yeah.
So in terms of, you know, being good mixed martial artists, he's good at that.
Yeah. Yeah, and he has a few exciting fighters under his wing. So he makes up for the grinding guys with like the Carlos Condits and Diego Sanchez's.
Yes.
All right, let's move on to Matt Hamill, Tito Ortiz.
What an emotional fight.
Yeah, that was
Everyone was exhausted after that, you know. In the audience, they're just going back and forth, you know. Booing Tito on his way out. Yeah. He gets a good punch in. Everyone's going, "Yeah, Tito!"
Yeah.
And then they're back to booing
Tito.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, but I mean, even though he lost, Tito Ortiz looked better than he has in a while. He came out a lot more, seemed sure of himself. And if he's to be believed, you know, he's, you know, injury-free and stuff, which he hadn't been for a while. But, I mean, yeah, Matt Hamill just kind of showed he's got a... I don't know if he necessarily has a more complete game than Tito, but he's better at doing what Tito Ortiz used to be really good at.
Yeah, I think that was one of the things that really struck me about this match, is I kind of considered... Tito to be better at what Tito does, but Matt Hamill to be the better, more rounded mixed martial artist. But then I figured they kind of both do the same thing, so Tito would probably out-edge Matt Hamill just by being better at what Matt Hamill wants to do. And it turned out I was dead wrong. Tito outstruck Matt Hamill, but then Matt Hamill was the one who got the takedowns. Standing up, Tito was actually looking pretty effective, certainly in the first round, and even in the second and third rounds, he seemed to be landing a more well-rounded game. Matt Hamill probably hit harder, but I think Tito landed more strikes, but the takedowns, I think, were the biggest story on the fight, which is funny that Tito lost the fight on takedowns, because that's always been his M.O., is, you know, he's the guy who out-wrestles people, and he loses fights where he can't get you down.
Right. Yeah, so, I mean, pretty surprising outcome. Sounds like, from quotes online, that sort of thing, Dana White said Matt Hamill will probably get a top 10 opponent next, and doesn't sound like Tito Ortiz is going anywhere necessarily either. But, yeah, I mean, what do we, you know, Matt Hamill has that win over John Jones, but I mean, he won by getting his own ass kicked, but
he did a good job of that.
Yes, he did. But I mean, how do you guys think he fares against a top 10 opponent, and who could it be?
Well, I think the obvious choice right now is Little Nogueira.
Okay.
Just given the fact that he's really the only guy who's probably top 10 who isn't tied up right now. I mean, you got Bader fighting Jones, you got Rashad fighting Shogun, you got Rampage fighting Machida. Nogueira is just kind of the odd man out right now.
Yeah, what is Forrest Griffin up to also would be the only other guy I could think of.
Well, Forrest Griffin, I think, is supposed to have a fight coming up with Rich Franklin.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think that's not confirmed, but that's what everyone's leaning towards. But, I mean, Nogueira just fought and lost, last month. And so, I mean, he'll be ready around the same time that Matt Hamill is ready. And that'll be the nice step up that Matt Hamill's looking for. And it'll be an interesting style change. It'll be the guy, I mean, Matt Hamill is a lot like Ryan Bader, stylistically. He's a hard-hitting wrestler who's not necessarily good, you know, a super technical boxer, but is decent, but has power. And then Nogueira is going to probably have the edge standing up in terms of technique, the edge in terms of jiu-jitsu, but will quite possibly spend a lot of time on his back. So can Hamill defend the submissions? Can Hamill, deal with the jab and land the big shot that, you know, could possibly finish Nogueira? I think it'll be an interesting fight, and I think it's quite possibly the only one that they could set up in terms of, actually making good on that promise of giving him a top 10 fighter without having to wait for a while.
Hmm. Yeah, so big step up for Matt Hamill, and we'll. I mean,
I guess.
Yeah, I mean, well, I don't know if he can.
I don't know if he's going to be
ready.
Long for this mixed martial arts world.
Yeah,
like he's okay,
right,
at best. And, you know, he's got a great story, so
yeah,
that really goes a long way. And
yeah, but I think it'll be really telling to see how he handles. I mean, again, like John Jones kicked his ass and he won Matt Hamill won because of elbows.
Yeah, 12-6, baby.
Yeah, can't do that. But, I kind of agree that, yeah, I think he's going to find himself in a tough spot when top 10 pool. But yeah, no, I mean, certainly he's a inspirational fighter and figure in the sport. But, yeah, I mean, like, I don't know how much higher he can go as far as competition level goes.
They need to just keep him around a few months after his movie comes out, you know? just throw him softballs.
You're a cold man.
Until the movie comes out.
And then cut him loose.
And then just throw him to the sharks.
Easy there, Vince McMahon. Come on. All right.
You know, I think I might have a slightly higher opinion of Hamill than you, Matt.
Yeah, you really hate him.
I don't hate him. No, I'm just saying, like, I am not impressed by his performance.
Yeah, competitively, okay.
Well, right. No, I mean, I'm not even talking about, like, Matt Hamill as a guy, you know. Screw him. But, I'm just talking about the mixed martial artist. He's still relatively new in mixed martial arts. He was, a big guy off season 3 of The Ultimate Fighter, which is really still only, like, 4 years ago.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he hasn't been in the big leagues for that long. And he's improved a lot since then. He used to just be a wrestler, and he's gotten some pretty sweet highlight reel knockouts since then. Is he ever going to be the champ? Nah. But is he going to be around for a while and, get some probably quality wins over on his belt, before he goes away? I think so. I don't think he's necessarily just going to be a gatekeeper for the rest of his career, or just a guy to keep around for the sake of keeping him around because he's a name. I think he's legit. He's certainly top 20, and I think he'll stay top 20. Whether or not he'll beat Nogueira and crack the top 10, I don't know if he'll ever actually crack that top 10, but
right.
He'll probably hover around it for, I think, a significant amount of time.
All right. So I guess what's left for Tito? I mean, for him, like, as far as accomplishment goes, I mean, he doesn't really have anything to prove at this point other than that he can still fight. But, I mean, he one of the UFC's, historically one of their biggest names and, one of their best title holders. I don't think it's like one of the Chuck Liddell situations where you're like, we don't want to see him fight anymore, but, I mean, what does he have to fight for, I guess, at this point?
Yeah, well, Tito's situation is not the Chuck Liddell situation. It's almost more of the Keith Jardine situation, except for the fact that all of Tito's losses, with the exception of this one, were to really elite people.
Yeah.
And, a lot of them, we didn't realize quite how elite they were at the time. Like, Rashad Evans he had the draw with, but you know what? Rashad Evans became a champion 2 fights later. Machida he lost to, but Machida became a champion 2 fights later. I don't think Matt Hamill's about to be a champion 2 fights from now. But, Tito lost these fights, but there was not a single fight that Tito didn't hang in. He's yet to be finished by any of these guys except for Chuck Liddell. And even then, that rematch with Chuck Liddell in 2006... that was a pretty lame stoppage.
Yeah.
Tito wasn't winning, but, he was getting his arm punched.
Yeah. So what do you think? Bring back Ken Shamrock?
Well,
Ken wouldn't say no.
Yeah, he wouldn't. One of the things that I've seen from a lot of people, a lot of people are saying, like, oh, screw Tito, he hasn't had a solid win in a long time. There's one thing that I've seen, and that's just like, he's a good fighter. He's not an elite one, but he's still a good fighter.
Yeah.
He's got a name. He knows how to sell a fight. I'm sure he'll be back. I bet he'll take some time off. I bet he'll have another surgery. I bet he'll bang Jenna Jameson. I bet he'll talk a lot of stuff, and I bet he'll come back and drop another decision sometime down the line. Who it's going to be to, I don't know. But, Tito's going to continue to be Tito. I don't think this loss ruins him.
Right.
It sucks for him. I mean, I'm sure he would have liked to win this, but I'm sure he would have liked to win any given fight that he had. He drops a little bit of stock each time he loses, but, I mean, that goes for any fighter. He's a really long ways removed from being the champ, but he's still not an old guy.
No.
I mean, he's, what, like 34?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he's still younger than a lot of people that are, very active. So I wouldn't expect him to ever hold the title again. I wouldn't expect him to ever compete for a title again. But I will expect to see him on posters.
Yeah.
He's going to continue to be co-main event status for probably as long. long as he wants to keep on fighting. And I'd imagine he wants to keep on fighting until he gets his ass kicked. Because really, I mean, he's lost, and he's lost poorly. I mean, that fight against Machida especially, he did get dominated for most of that fight, but it's not like he got knocked out. He didn't get even submitted. He's lost a lot of decisions. And, I mean, even a lot of these decisions, he was really the one making the fight. He was the guy being the aggressor, even if he was getting outpointed. He was the one coming forward and, you know, getting punched in the face, as opposed to the guy who was, you know, walking backwards and punching. So, yeah, I don't think this is the end of the road for Tito. There's people who are calling for it, but they're a bunch of haters. F the haters.
Indeed. All right, we've been talking a lot, but there's one more main card fight to talk about. Brennan Schaub, Gabriel Gonzaga, Schaub getting the unanimous decision. I think we all predicted that one correctly, so kumbaya, everybody.
Yes, so now I think it is time to officially say that beating Gonzaga does not give you a title shot anymore.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, he's still that gatekeeper role, but not gatekeeper to a title shot, just gatekeeper to higher level competition.
Yes. I mean, Gonzaga is a solid guy, but he got that win over Krokop, and then all of a sudden it's like, holy crap, Gonzaga's the bomb.
Yeah.
And then he's lost a lot since then, and hasn't really, I mean, he's won some fights, but he hasn't won any fights that were like, holy crap, since then. So I think it's finally time to say, okay, Gonzaga is a solid fighter. He perhaps journeyman status.
Yeah. You know, honestly, you could make the same argument for him that you made for Tito. I don't know if it'd be a good argument, but you look at his record, and he's only lost to top-level competition recently. You know, he beat Krokop back in 07, then lost the title fight to Randy Couture, lost to Fabricio Werdum. Lost to Shane Carwin, lost to Junior Dos Santos. So, I mean, all those guys are pretty high-level fighters, you know, and then he's got wins over guys no one's, you know, who haven't really made waves, and then this loss to Brennan Schaub is kind of the one that kind of stands out. But
I would say that's actually an outstanding parallel, Tobin.
Hooray!
I mean, in terms of relevance, the two are almost identical in the fact that, you know, they've got something that they're holding on to from a long time ago. Tito may be holding on to something from longer ago, but his, you know, was a championship.
Yeah.
So that's more legit to hold on to it. But, yeah, I mean, both of them make their name from something in the past and still, like, kind of command their name value. I mean, like, you ask the average guy out there who you know, who watches UFC but isn't like the, you know, the hardcore nerdcore fan like us,
right?
They probably know who Gonzaga is. They may not be able to tell you who he's beaten and who he's lost to, but they know who he is.
They probably might recognize the name, yeah.
Yeah, and Tito's the same way. Although they'll know Tito more, but that's just because Tito talks a lot more.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'd say they're in the same boat. And actually, I think this pay-per-view kind of had them lose to a similar guy, where it's like, whoa, you know, you usually just lose to guys who are ready for a title shot, and now you lost to some guy who isn't ready for a title shot.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, both their stock is going to drop in the same way, but at the same time, neither of them are necessarily, you know, like, due for the chopping block. Tito kind of makes the case for that because, yeah, he hasn't won a fight in 4 years, but, you know, when you only fight once a year and you only fight title contenders,
yeah,
that changes things. If Tito were fighting guys that, you know, Gonzaga were fighting, or, you know, I mean, a lot of people were fighting, he'd probably have some wins in that time, too.
Yeah, agreed. Now, let's talk about Schaub. What's next for him? He called out, I think he name-dropped Frank Mir at the post-fight press conference. I mean, is Brennan Schaub ready for that top 10 competition as well?
You know, I would like to see him move a little more slowly.
Yeah, especially because he's already fought one top 10, arguably top 10 guy in Big Country. No one really knew it at the time. Well, none of the mainstream fans did, but I think a lot of people, you know, were like, hey, Big Country's pretty good.
People named Tobin were all like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, well, he would have beat Arlovsky if he hadn't got stood up from side control. But anyways, yeah, no, but, you know, Brendan Schaub's already been in the deep water, and we see how he responded, and clearly he's grown since then. But, you know, what's next for him? Do we do we just give him the next step up, Stefan Struve, or what do you do there?
You know, I would like to see a slow build-up for him.
Yeah.
Because he's one of those guys that I could see being really good down the line. But, I mean, you throw him at a guy like Frank Mir, and, you know, Mir hasn't looked spectacular since his Congo fight, but...
He probably would hustle Schaub on the ground.
Yeah, and, I mean, Mir doesn't have the best offensive wrestling, but, you know, I don't know how good Schaub's takedown defense is either.
Right.
So... You know, like, good on Schaub to be calling him out, but I don't really want to see that for Schaub's sake.
Right.
You know, give him a smaller name. Give him some guys that he can beat. Give him some guys that he can learn from. And give him the Mir fight down the line. It was good on him to beat Gonzaga, but, I mean, he even said in the post-fight interview, like, I wasn't looking to finish him. You know, like, I was looking to, or, you know, I'm sure he would have liked to finish him, but.
Right.
He wasn't expecting to. He was trying to outpoint the guy. And anytime you hear something like that, especially against a guy who has been finished a number of times, it's like, you know, why not? All these other guys managed to finish Gonzaga off. So I think that says something about Schaub's confidence in his skills that he wasn't wanting to get a finish against... a guy that, like Carwin managed to finish off, Verdun managed to finish off, and, I mean, Gonzaga is not a guy who's only been beaten by decision. So, to aspire to defeat him by submission, I think it just kind of says something about your confidence and where you're at.
Yeah, I mean, Schaub, he's got that self-awareness, which is good, because, yeah, I mean, he's still very young in the fight game. He's only had 7 fights, and you know, just you know, hasn't been in MMA that long. You know, just a couple years now. So, I don't know. Maybe we'll see. Chet Congo. What do you think, Matt?
I think that'd be good. Yeah, I would love to have something like that.
Chet Congo. I'm trying to think of who else would be kind of fit that. I mentioned Stefan Struve.
Mm-hmm.
I think both those guys. Maybe Stefan Struve has a win, but. You know, the UFC likes to match up the winners with winners, losers with losers. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know who else in the heavyweight division is kind of sitting out there that Schaub might be looking to take on.
Well, I mean, he already called somebody out, but then maybe a little bit past of his, past what he's able to go for. But,
right. You
know, why not? Give him the match.
Well, who did Chet Congo fight recently? That guy he fought, maybe they can match up.
Maybe.
But, yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, so we'll see. But, yeah, I mean, I think Brendan Schaub's got some good stuff coming down the line for him, but yeah, I think it should be a slow build, especially because he's got that loss on his record with Roy Nelson, kind of showed even though he's grown since then that he's not necessarily ready for that next big step up just yet. He's got good solid hands, obviously. You know, they'll mention 80 times he's got golden gloves in a state of some place.
Well, you know, you need more than that these days.
A little bit.
Yeah. You know, I think he's probably a fight or two away from a major step up. You mentioned Chuck Congo, and I would actually like to fight or see the fight between Chuck Congo and Brock Lesnar sometime down the line. This is something that I kind of wanted to see a long time ago, and we kind of got cheated out of it because Brock Lesnar ended up getting a title shot.
Right.
And, you know, ended up fighting Randy Couture instead, but... I remember my friends and I discussing Brock Lesnar against Chuck Congo a long time ago and thinking that would be a fun fight. Whether or not it would be competitive, you know, like it's kind of hard to say, especially since Brock Lesnar has improved a lot since then. But I don't know that I necessarily want to see Brendan Schaub fight Chuck Congo, if for no other reason that I think Congo is probably better at Schaub's best thing.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Schaub doesn't seem to want to be on the ground too much. He spent about a second on the ground during his fight the other day and ended up in a rear naked choke somehow. So I think he wants to be a stand-up guy, and Chuck Hongo is about as good as stand-up guys get in the UFC.
Yeah. All right, so that was a pretty comprehensive breakdown of UFC 121, at least the main card. Any other thoughts you guys had from that? I know, you know, I saw a couple of the undercard fights. Definitely felt pretty foolish for my Patrick Cote pick. Got to say that.
You know, we didn't see that, but I know that Tom Lawler won, which makes Matt happy.
Yay, Tom!
Yeah, and he won a decision. So good on him for, you know, because we talked about before, you know, the pay, like I figured, you know, that pacing problem that's been an issue for Tom Lawler is he just really seems to come out guns a-blazing that first round and then doesn't have anything left after that, and he definitely fought more strategically this time, and Cote just didn't have anything for him on the ground.
Now, one thing that I have heard in this is that Cote escaped an arm triangle illegally in the first round.
Yeah. I think this fight was actually shown on the Spike TV broadcast.
Yes, which I missed.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. But yeah, and no one saw it except for the production team, I think. Like they paged Joe Rogan and are like, "Hey guys, watch this replay." Yeah, Cote totally grabbed a fence to pull himself out or roll himself over, and that sucks. And that's pretty much all I have to say about that. No broader statements about like Patrick Cote's a dirty fighter. Because, you know, I think that's, and again, not to make excuses on the same token, but, you know, that's your survival instinct kicking in. And,
yeah.
You know, you got to learn how to, seems kind of silly to say, but you got to stifle that when it comes, if that's breaking the rules. But,
yeah.
I don't think it was like some dirty play, but, yeah, it sucks. He shouldn't have done it. And,
okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, no, it was one of those things like, oh, you got out, and then, like, between rounds or something like that, we saw how he got out, and you're like, oh, yeah, he shouldn't have done that.
All right, well, fair enough. I'm glad Tom won anyway, though. I like Tom.
Yeah.
Did he come out goofy?
He did not, because it was on the Spike TV broadcast, so they don't show the entrances on that, because they're all on the time crunch.
Was he still rocking the mustache?
You know, I don't think he was. I'll admit, I watched that after the main event, like the main card fights on my DVR, so I was pretty tired and out of it at that point, but yeah, I don't think he had anything too over the top or wacky going on. And then Ultimate Fighter Season 11 winner?
Yes, previous season.
Yeah, Court McGee. Submission arm triangle over Ryan Jensen in the third round. And it's Court McGee's first win out of the Ultimate Fighter circuit.
That is correct.
So, good on him. It sounds like he had to overcome some adversity in that fight.
Apparently he lost round one, but won round two and then scored a sub in the round three.
Yeah, so the slow build of Court McGee continues, and we've all talked about it. He's got, you know, you talk about good stories for, like, you know, building up a fighter. Court McGee's got a pretty awesome personal story.
Yeah, he's got the ex-junkie thing going on.
So the inspirational there.
Yes. Also on the pay-per-view, we watched two prelim fights.
Yeah.
There was the nice submission win over Daniel Roberts over Michael Guyman.
Yep.
The Anaconda Choke, which was a fun little fight. And then there was also a fight that pleased me very much, seeing John Manson punch the crap out of Gilbert Ivel.
Yeah, that was kind of impressive for two reasons. I mean, you know, I think everyone knows at this point, Gilbert Ivel, not someone who should be fighting off of his back if he wants to win. But Manson kind of been known for being a wet blanket.
Yeah,
and you know, he really put it on Gilbert Ivel in this fight.
And Matt can probably attest to this, as he and I watched the pay per view together.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were kind of looking at our watches and being like, okay, well, if they're going to show us any more fights, they're going to be quick ones.
Yeah.
And then it showed John Manson against Gilbert Ivel, and I let out a loud groan.
Because you're like, oh no, Gilbert Ivel's going to knock him out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that was exactly what threw my head. Like, oh crap, Gilbert Ivel is going to win this fight in like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then, he ended up on his back and got the crap punched out of him, which made me pleased.
Yeah. So, John Madsen, putting his name in into consideration for that next step up? I mean, it's kind of funny because he's not really on anyone's radar, and Gilbert Ivel is not like really a top 10, top 15, or even, you know, top 20 fighter maybe, but, you know, I think, you know, Matson's got, like, what, four or five wins now in the UFC? And
I think it's four.
Yeah, and you know, this is his big, impressive finish for the highlight reel. You know, I think we'll probably see him take that step up in competition as well, too, now.
You know, I would almost be inclined to give him the rematch from the Ultimate Fighter House against Brendan Schaub.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
They had a very competitive fight in the house.
Yeah.
And Schaub actually kind of cheated to win that fight. Madsen kept going for the takedown, and Schaub was keeping the fight standing by grabbing the fence.
Oh, that's right, that's right. Yeah,
and then scored the knockout win. So, I mean, he won, but it was kind of a tainted win.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know that I'm necessarily, like bitter about it. Like, oh, Madsen should have won that fight. But, you know, like, I'm interested to see how it would play out if they were to have a rematch.
Yeah, and especially with it being a three-round fight as well, you know, that dynamic changes as well. No, I think that'd be a good matchup again. And I'm not saying either of those guys are, like, contenders anytime soon, but the only reason I could see that fight not coming together is because the UFC doesn't want to stunt the growth of a prospect. But,
yeah.
But no, from a matchup, you know, like a style matchup standpoint, I think that'd be a pretty fun fight. Or at least a good fight to show where those guys are in their careers now.
Yeah.
All right, so that's...
That wraps up UFC 121.
Yeah, any final thoughts on that? I mean, I think...
I guess we just run down. Sam Stout beat Paul Taylor by a split decision.
Yeah, and without seeing it, it sounds like it was kind of controversial, at least from what I've read. But yeah, you know, having not seen it myself, I couldn't speak to, you know, whether it was deservedly controversial or not. But
okay. Yeah. I haven't heard anything about it.
Yeah.
I just read this off SureDog right now.
Yeah. But, and then the Chris Camozzi Dong Yi Yang fight, again, we didn't see it, but another split decision in favor of Chris Camozzi.
Very heavy on the decisions, this card. I mean, yeah. Even the fights that we didn't see, there were a lot of decisions.
Right. And, you know, again, like, even though we had all these decisions, you know, at least on the main card, you know, I didn't think any of them were really, really boring, you know. I guess the Jake Shields fight was maybe a little slow, but I mean, I still found that interesting because it was kind of like, oh, is Martin Kampman going to be able to, like, defy the odds and, you know, come back against an out-of-shape Jake Shields?
I thought that fight was interesting, but it wasn't exciting.
Right, yeah, I mean, there's...
And it could have been a lot more exciting if Martin Kampman would have stood up in that last round.
Yeah.
And that was one of those fights that, you know, I really just wanted to yell at my TV. Because there was one guy that I wanted to win, and being the armchair quarterback, you know, I was like, I could have won that fight for him.
Yeah.
If he would have done what I told him to do.
All right. No major upcoming MMA events. Greg's favorite promotion, though, Bellator.
Who?
Yeah. If you can find them in between college football games on Fox Sports Net... this Thursday, Bellator 34. I think it's their finale. But you have a couple championship fights on the card, so worth checking out. And if anyone listening out there didn't see last week's show, which featured their super fight between Eddie Alvarez and Roger Huerta, another card worth tracking down if you can dig it up online. Bellator is actually pretty decent about putting their fights online because they want people to see them. So yeah, again, we don't talk about it much, but you know, they're putting on a couple decent fights, the finale of their women's tournament as well. And yeah, that Eddie Alvarez, Roger Huerta fight last week was pretty fun. You know, Alvarez took it. I think not surprising that he won, but in the method that he won, it was not as close as I think a lot of people were expecting.
Huerta got his butt kicked.
Yeah, he did. I mean, he took a beating, but he did not, I think he got one knockdown, which was pretty dramatic, but you know, other than that, it was all Alvarez. But yeah, you know, Eddie Alvarez kind of just putting his name out there as one of the top lightweight guys who's not in the big show, you know. So, and we're still hearing that you know, maybe we'll eventually get that Gilbert Melendez fight, which would be, I think, the biggest lightweight fight you could have outside of the UFC at this point.
Absolutely.
But the logistics of that. Who knows if that'll actually ever happen? But they still talk about it at least. Other than that, before we go, I don't know what else you guys want to talk about. But really fast, not like it was a big deal at all. But there was a challenge, Strikeforce Challengers card on Friday night, so it was just a solid 3 days of MMA. But you know, just one or two points coming out of that. We had LeVar Johnson at heavyweight kind of put the stamp on his opponent and kind of made the case for him being put up to the main Showtime card. I don't know how good of a heavyweight he is, but he's definitely, as many heavyweights do, he punches very hard.
Yes.
So, you know, I could definitely see him getting in there with someone like an Orlovsky or a Brett Rogers or something like that and just, you know, see what happens. I think he'd be at least competitive in fights like that. And then we also had the, let's see, let me pull up the full card here just to make sure I got the other fight that stood out to me was a women's fight, and it was at 145, which is novel because, you know, you have Chris Cyborg at the 145 champion in Strikeforce, and for the most part, it seems that Strikeforce is just like really scraping kind of every corner of the earth at this point to find challengers for and bringing in people who are fighting up a weight class or fighters that have experience but no one's seen before. Fighting Strikeforce, there's just no name recognition. So we saw a fight between Shanna Olsen and Julia Budd, and Julia Budd, her first MMA fight, she ended up kind of getting the upset. And I think what stood out to a lot of people is that she had really good stand-up, and she had the physique to be at 145. It wasn't that she was, she didn't seem out of place there against Shanna Olsen. But what was really funny is Mara Ronaldo got on the mic right afterwards doing the post-fight interview. And this is a person who's, you know, done Muay Thai for years, Julia Budd, apparently. Actually beat Gina Carano in a Muay Thai match, I believe. But she's 1-0 in MMA. And like 30 seconds into the post-fight interview, Mara Ronaldo was like, "So Chris Cyborg's the champion at 145. What did you think about fighting her eventually?" And it's kind of like, you know, like, "Oh, yeah, I'd love to fight her eventually." But it struck me on two levels. So I was like, Mara Ronaldo, you're being ridiculous. She only has one fight. She should totally fight. Oh, there's no one else in the 145 yeah. division. So it was just this weird thing where, like, Mara Ronaldo's crazy. But, I'm sure there's other fighters. But it's just someone to maybe keep an eye out on. And, again, it was kind of, you know, someone who had that good level stand-up. And, again, like the,
didn't look out of place at that
right.
weight class.
Yeah,
too.
She had like
that's what kill you if you like gain too much weight to be able to compete with somebody like that. Like
right.
Chris Cyborg is just that's her.
Right.
You know?
You see fighters fight up, you know, a weight fighting Chris Cyborg, and they look like they just kind of like, you know, didn't cut as much. And like Julia Budd was like she, you know, had a good build. She wasn't like, you know, she was in shape and at 145. So you know, maybe something to keep an eye on that. But you know. Just a nice weekend at MMA topped off by UFC 121.
Wonderful.
So I just binged on that on my DVR like all day Saturday.
Good for you.
Yeah. So anything else? Any crazy news we should talk about before we
bounce? You guys been following The Ultimate Fighter at all?
I think I'm still one or two episodes behind.
I finally caught up this last week. I Hulu'd. Hulu's got the hookup.
Really? Mm.
Yeah. So this last week we had a two-fight episode, which I think is the only two-fight episode of the season.
Okay.
The first fight was our Alaskan boy, Cody McKenzie, who is the long-haired guy who was kind of being annoying to Josh Koscheck.
Okay. Oh, yeah, okay, I got you. He's got the long dark hair and beard, and he's got that weird choke he does, right?
Yeah, he's from Cordova.
Yes.
Yeah, the middle of freaking nowhere. He fought Josh Koscheck's number one pick, Mark Stevens, I think his name was. He was the guy who wrestled with Koscheck in college. And they spend several minutes of the episode like, just avoid the guillotine. He's got a real good guillotine. And there was a nice segment where Nam Pham, the winner of the previous episode, was talking to Cody. He's like, "So what are you better at?" He's like, well, Cody's better than me at stand-up, and he's stronger, he's got better cardio, and he's pretty fast, and he's got good wrestling." And Nam says, "Well, what are you good at?" He's like, "Well, I'm going to win." So, okay, you know, how are you going to win? Like, "Well, I'm going to win. That's what I'm going to do." All right. So they get in there, and 17 seconds after the fight starts, Cody wins by guillotine.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So he's good at he's really good at one thing, it seems.
Yes. He just charged his opponent, and Mark went just crazy. He got a head kick really fast and went straight for the dive, went shooting in and got choked out like right away.
Wow.
But it was a weird guillotine because, you know, as a jiu-jitsu guy, like I was kind of been trained, like you can only guillotine a guy if you've got your guard or if you're mounted him. And I mean, Mark got the takedown. He was straight to side control. But Cody did this weird thing where he kind of wrapped his legs around Mark backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, Mark fell asleep. Like, it wasn't a tap out. Like, 17 seconds into the fight, he was asleep. And, I mean, Josh Koscheck was looking at the fight, and he had his, like, jaw dropped, and his eyes were wide. And it's like, oh. Like, you could feel the breath leaving his lungs.
Yeah.
It was a great moment. And then George St. Pierre says to his team, like, all right, guys, we need to be cool. Because when Josh Koscheck's team won, they all, like, beat on the wall to be really annoying to George's team. And George says, you know, I act like a really nice guy, but when I'm going to fight Josh Koscheck, I'm going to be like, bam, and punch him in the face. And they had another fight on the card where the Armenian guy who threw the napkin at Bruce Leroy was scheduled to
napkin
fight.
Napkin fight, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you didn't see that either.
Yeah, so, no, like I said, I'm kind of I at least two episodes behind, I guess.
Okay, yeah. Well, there was an Armenian guy who threw a napkin at Bruce Leroy and then had one of those, hold me back!
Where, I will fight you!
Yeah, he got all up in his face but didn't charge him until somebody was there to hold him back, which that guy did a good job of.
Okay.
And that guy fought the other long-haired guy on George St. Pierre's team, the guy who looks like a black guy but then has long blonde hair.
What?
Yeah.
I don't know, guy. Okay, yeah.
Tobin has not seen a single episode of the
Well,
Ultimate Fighter.
I know there's some guy who's scraggly long blonde hair. So yeah, okay, I got you now.
All right, yeah, that guy, and that guy wins by rear naked choke within about a minute and a half, after some pretty sick jiu-jitsu. Sick enough that Dana White felt the need to comment saying that was some sick jiu-jitsu.
Ooh, he got the Dana White stamp of approval.
Yeah, but he spent most of the time standing up on the guy's back. It was pretty wild. And what I mean standing up, like the other guy was standing up and he had the body triangle.
Oh, wow.
Like Matt Hughes, Frank Trigg style.
Okay.
So, all in all, a very solid episode.
Yeah.
And Hulu that stuff if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, most definitely. And like I said, I got them on my DVR, and I think like theultimatefighter.com has a bunch of back episodes as well. So, yeah, plenty of opportunity for people to check that out if they want. I just find I'm just a TV junkie in general, so it's hard for me to keep up with, you know, a lot of the dramas and stuff I watch and The Ultimate Fighter, which, you know, can be entertaining but is kind of stale for me at least. But, I mean, is this season going pretty well, you think, Greg?
You know, like now that I've caught up, it's certainly interesting. The fights have been more interesting than a lot of previous seasons, and I think that may just be that they're dipping back into the lower weight classes.
Yeah.
And lower weight classes typically are more interesting, especially once it gets into a second round. But they've really got some interesting style matchups and some interesting, not only characters, but interesting fighters, like this guy, this Alaskan guy, and I mean, of course, like, I'm on his nuts because he's an Alaskan guy, and I'm an Alaskan guy, and we don't have a whole lot of those.
Represents.
Like, it's weird that you have a guy who's just, like, all about one move, but he always seems to catch it. Like you don't hear about that a whole lot. And they were even saying, like, I went on this guy's Sure Dog record, and he's 11-0.
Yeah.
And 9 of his wins are by guillotine.
So he likes the guillotine. He's got that weird guillotine where he does, like, the double... Like, he locks it in funny and kind of, like, puts pressure on both sides or something like that? Weird?
Yeah, he's got what he calls, it's the McKenzie team because his last name is McKenzie. He's got what he calls that. But, I mean, it's essentially a guillotine just with his own little flavor added to it. But, yeah, I mean, he's got a hell of a guillotine. But it's just kind of, it's interesting to me, you don't see a whole lot of guys where it's just like, I've got one thing that I do freaking outstanding. I'm going to do that in every fight, no matter what. So I think that's pretty interesting. And there's just, like, a cool mix of characters. I think this has been one of the more fun seasons, even if the stuff between the coaches has been fairly planned.
Right.
Because, I mean, Josh Koscheck keeps trying to get into George's head, and George is just like, I do not care. about any of this. Like the big thing on this last episode was that Josh Koscheck parked so close to George's car that George couldn't get into it.
What a jerk.
Yeah, what a jerk. And then after a training session, Josh hid one of George's sandals. Yeah. And he noticed the cut on George's forehead.
So Josh Koscheck is like 12 years old.
Yeah, so I mean, like the coaches stuff hasn't been all that interesting, but I think as far as the fighters' point of view,
yeah,
this has been one of the more fun seasons in recent memory.
Yeah. Now, if Josh Koscheck really wants to get under GSP's skin, he has to wait for him to get super drunk and pass out on the lawn, and then spray him with a water hose.
That would be cool.
That would definitely do the trick. Season one reference. Come on, Matt.
Huh? I was. I'm with you. Whatever.
No. Okay. we should wrap up, but before I think we do, it'd be remiss not to actually talk about the thing we referenced several times during the podcast.
Yeah. So why would you mention the Undertaker, WWE superstar, in a mixed martial arts podcast, Tobin?
Well, funny story. The Undertaker, also, real name Mark Calloway, I believe.
Yes. Mark Calloway, yeah.
What a handsome name.
Yeah, he's actually been a fan of MMA for several years now. I don't know if they show him too much on screen when he's at events, but he's been following the sport for a while. And not that I watch pro wrestling anymore, but I actually is such a big fan, he incorporates MMA moves into his wrestling performance.
Yeah, right around the time that I got out of pro wrestling, I remember him kind of doing a go-go plata.
Right, and he rocks like the MMA gloves basically and stuff. But yeah, he's been a fan of the sport. And you see other pro wrestlers, like Steve Austin and stuff at the events. But yeah, Undertaker, Mark Calloway, been an MMA fan for a while, or at least UFC. But he was at this event. They showed him in the crowd, and of course, he was one of the guys in the pro wrestling world to really put Brock Lesnar over, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, Matt, you and I have seen the Hell in a Cell match where Brock Lesnar is fighting The Undertaker, and Undertaker just bleeds all over the place.
Yeah, that was amazing, like a stuck pig, dude. He was juicing like a mofo.
Yeah, but,
that thing was crazy.
Indeed it was, indeed it was. So, we have The Undertaker at the event, and what was really weird is, they showed him in the crowd, like, hey, it's The Undertaker. But afterwards, Ariel Helwani, who you mentioned, Greg, who does work for MMAfighting.com, I believe, and various other organizations.
Best journalist in the game.
Yeah, he's really great. Has a satellite radio show and stuff. Very, very good questioner. He actually scored an interview with the Undertaker. And for people who don't follow professional wrestling, that's kind of a big deal.
Is it?
Yeah, I mean, they still called him Undertaker and stuff like that, but I mean, it's really odd that, because part of the thing about the pro wrestling world is, like, those guys stay in character nearly constantly.
And it's very insular too. Like, you know,
right.
You would
yeah.
think that Vince McMahon would not want yeah. his product being filmed at a competing product's
right,
place.
Or just like any kind of insight into the world of professional wrestling. I mean, like, people have gotten fired for the way they carry themselves at, public yeah. events, like the WWE, like all kinds of things. They have like a very strict dress code. It's just like, and again, like, they want
right,
their... They want their people to be in character all the time, for the most part. And granted, Mark Calloway was not there wearing a trench coat and hat.
Right,
but
he kind of dropped that a while ago. As soon as he got a Sarah tattoo on his throat, it's hard to, separate the two men.
I think he's back. Again, I don't watch professional wrestling anymore, but I think he's back to the dead man thing. But again, it's just odd that you'll see someone outside of the world of pro wrestling interview.
Would they interview him about mixed martial
yeah,
arts?
Yeah,
he's like, I'm a fan, I like it.
Yeah, it was a bit of that, because, and again, like, he is, like, again, a legit fan, not just, like, some dude who's like, hey, I'm on camera. But, he was kind of distracted during the interview, it seemed, and then Brock Lesnar walks by all beaten up and...
old school.
And, all walking back to his locker room all dejected, and The Undertaker stops the interview... Just kind of like grabs Lesnar by the shoulder, or gets his attention. He's like, "Hey, you want to do it?" And it was weird. And Ariel Helwani was like, "What was that about?" Awkward pause. It's some personal between us that doesn't really talk about much.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was really striking is that he didn't want to get into it. He just said it's personal and just wanted to leave it at that.
Right, and of course the internet exploded Like, oh,
smart man, that Undertaker.
The WWE is setting something up. And I guess Dave Meltzer, who's a big pro wrestler reporter as well as an MMA reporter, kind of saying, yeah, the WWE's trying to reach out to Lesnar to do a WrestleMania match, which with the Undertaker.
The Undertaker's first loss
at
a WrestleMania.
He's undefeated at WrestleMania, folks.
That's crazy.
Yeah, so there's this big to do about, like, oh, the WWE is like just planting the seeds, getting in there, doing a worked interview with Ariel Helwani. They got him in on it, or, you know, tricked him into doing the interview to set up this thing with Brock Lesnar. And you know, probably worked better if Brock Lesnar had won. But I don't know, because again, the Undertaker goes to UFC events all the time, so it's not abnormal that he'd be there. But yeah, it was weird. It was weird, and that's all I can say.
Want to do it? Game night, my house.
Yeah.
Bring the wives.
Yeah.
See Sable again.
Yeah. But so that itself is interesting. You know, like, pro wrestling fans would die to see the Undertaker versus Brock Lesnar again.
That would be I don't watch wrestling.
Yeah, because wrestling sucks
that.
Now, and that's why they would die. They would love that.
Right, right. But Lesnar walked away when he was like at the top of his game in the WWE, and it was like a lot of the life, the road, like the road travel and all that, he just didn't want a part of. I'm sure the WWE was trying to get something going there, but I don't think it was like this.
Like, I don't know, man.
A huge conspiracy. Again, The Undertaker probably would have been there anyways. So I'm sure they were trying to work an angle, but it's not like this big setup, and yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
well,
I don't know.
That I've
yeah.
read a lot of since then, because, of course, you know, being the former WWF fan,
yeah.
You know, like, holy crap, Undertaker and Brock have some heat. You know,
yeah.
I remember them wrestling, but, you know, I had to look it up, too. And one of the things that was prevalent on the internet was that, you know, Brock Lesnar decided to make his move to the Minnesota Vikings after he found out he was set to job to The Undertaker. You know, I mean, who knows? I don't know if there's any truth to that or not. But, you know, maybe The Undertaker would be like, well, I lost to him. Why is he not willing to lose to me?
Right, it's kind of the quid pro quo in pro wrestling. You know, you gotta, you know, make each other's names off of each other, but you gotta, you know, be expected to return the favor, if not to that person, then to someone else down the line, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, he said it's personal.
Right.
Which is also kind of one of the things that helps. I mean, granted, it was a UFC event, not a WWF event or WWE event. But, you know, he didn't go in there and be like, well, what was that all about? I was like, I hate that guy so much, I want him to die. I'm going
right,
to kill
right.
him and chokeslam him through the cage. You know, he didn't go all crazy. He was just like, I don't want to talk about it.
Right, and I think that was the thing that made people kind of suspicious, like, oh, is this an angle the WWE is trying to work in? And who knows, we'll see. Again, it does sound like it's being reported that the WWE has at least reached out to Lesnar for, like, hey, you want to do a one-off WrestleMania shot? So, and they've done that before with, like, people like Floyd Mayweather and stuff like that. So it's not uncommon for the WWE to reach out to people outside of the wrestling world. But Lesnar's a former wrestler. The only thing, obviously, he was under a UFC contract, and they've been kind of notorious for not wanting their fighters to do anything else, as far as, like, you know, like
and
one
for
of
for good reason,
right? In concerns of injury for sure, and that's common with a lot of sports in general.
Well, that and protecting the brand.
Yeah, there's protecting the brand, but I mean that's one of the big hang-ups they had with Fedor. One of many is like, oh, he was someone to do like Sambo or something like that, and they're like, yeah, no.
This is a bit different.
Yes and no. Yes, they are direct pay-per-view competitors, but the UFC is also kicking their ass. I think
want to give the World Wrestling Entertainment any credence by giving them your former champion.
Right. No, and that's an excellent point. I do think that is valid, but I think also there's the concern for you could get
and the injuries.
Yeah.
And you know, like, and wrestlers, you know. Are a bit sensitive about their job. So, you know, maybe somebody would go out there and purposely try to hurt Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
Not saying that, but really this should not have any legs at all. Like, this is a...
Well, also there's something to be said for the fact that Dana White has been doing everything he can to legitimize the UFC for the past 10 years.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think he wants to sever as many ties as he can to pro wrestling as he possibly could.
Yeah, in fact, I was actually surprised when Rampage Jackson was out promoting the A-Team. That there's a video making the rounds on like YouTube and stuff like that where him and a couple cast members showed up on WWE Raw because as like guest hosts, and like I was surprised the UFC let that happen, but maybe they didn't have any say in it because it was for promotional purposes for the movie. But like that was kind of surprising to me.
Yeah, I would probably say Hollywood Burger Face pointed to that, and then UFC, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
you know,
in terms of the things that the UFC could let a fighter do, promoting something on pro wrestling as opposed to pro wrestling.
Doing pro wrestling, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like, Rampage wasn't pretending to fight anybody when he was on Raw, as opposed to Brock Lesnar is essentially going to do, would in theory be doing a fake fight.
Yeah.
And I think the UFC does not want to associate with fake fights because they want to prove, as much as, you know, we all understand they're real fights, there's still people out there that are like, oh, I can't believe this
right.
stuff was real. And they're trying to distance themselves away from that. So you can't be having your previous heavyweight champion going and just, like, you know, having a match at WrestleMania.
Right, yeah, this isn't like the early days of MMA where you had, like, Frank Shamrock and Dan Severn and all those guys just kind of jumping back and forth between real fights and pro wrestling matches and stuff like that. So, yeah, so interesting aside, I think it was definitely...
And if it was, like, pre-planned like that, like, it's nothing, you know, they're probably going to get a few more viewers the next time Undertaker fights in the World Wrestling Entertainment. Like, if this was all premeditated to just be one big nothing, then, you know, bravo to them, you know, brilliant.
Yeah, but I think it definitely, for me, again, like a guy who I still kind of, like, news-wise, kind of follow a few of the things in pro wrestling, don't watch it at all on a regular basis, but, you know, a lot of us grew up watching pro wrestling and made that jump over to MMA, and I know all the hardcores out there are like, no, we always liked real fights, blah, 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 but Brock Lesnar is the UFC's biggest draw because he's a former pro wrestler.
Yes.
There's no two ways about that, and a lot of people made the jump, not with him, but, you know, again, it was like, oh, you know, I like the idea of the fight thing, but this wrestling thing is maybe seems a little childish now, or whatever. I want to see real competition, and let's also not avoid the idea that Dana White and the UFC has built their business model off of the pro wrestling WWE model, as far as promotion goes, for the most part. So
that's why any kind of cross-promotion... WWE would have everything to gain, while UFC would have everything to lose.
Yeah. But maybe Vince McMahon's just trying to get back for launching the Ultimate Fighter after Monday Night Raw.
I wouldn't put it past him. Would not put it past him.
If Vince McMahon had just said, no, don't let Spike air Tough Season 1 after WWE Raw, this UFC thing wouldn't even be a thing.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Heavy, man. All right, well, on that note, we shall leave you. Thanks so much for for tuning us in. You know, leave a comment, go to the forum, and we will see you next week. As always,
I'm Greg Rowland.
I'm Tobin Shelby.
And I'm Matt Collins.
Audio show.
Viva La Raza, man.
What does that mean?
I think it means long live the race, which actually is very inappropriate for a white person to say. So.